Welcome to The Lowdown, KMXT's show dedicated to giving you the up-to-date information we have available on the COVID-19 outbreak and how it's impacting life on Kodiak Island. The Lowdown will focus on facts as provided to us by local and state officials. During the show, we give you access to these local experts who have information on COVID-19 and recommendations related to it. If you have a question for our guests, please email it to lowdown@kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181.
So good. Watch it while we had COVID, and it was so hard to stop.
Oh, we're on the air. We're getting a little warbly noise here. I'm not sure why. Morning, another Wednesday, another Doc of the Rock today, again with Dr. Jones and Theobald. We think it's close to being over. We hope it's close to being over, but are we just kidding ourselves? Worldwide, there's almost 160 million people who've gotten COVID-19, and more than 3.3 million people already have died from what's been attributed to COVID-19. There's still huge surges going on in India, Brazil, Mexico, and numbers rising in a lot of locations around the world. In the U.S., however, things appear to be trending upwards. We now have the lowest death total per day in more than 10 months. We're down to only 600 people dying a day. And we've registered only 38,000 new cases a day. Only 38,000 new cases, and that's like a cause for celebration. In Boston recently, they ran a headline the other day that said, "Nobody died today." Where has that taken us from a year to now to actually run that in as a headline that you celebrate the fact that nobody died in your community today from COVID-19? That's where we're at now. In Alaska, we are also trending down. There's only 62 cases yesterday reported throughout the state and only 2 deaths yesterday. And we speak of that like it's nothing, you know, like only 2 people died. And that's cause for celebration. I'm not sure that's cause for celebration, but it's a lot better than 150 people a day. But we are getting this new information out of Ketchikan and Metlakatla, where all of a sudden the community has been overrun. And they had 77 new cases in Ketchikan and 65 in the last week with 1 hospitalization. And they've shut the town down again. In Metlakatla, they're thinking the same. Like, businesses are closed. Restrictions are back in place. Schools are closed. And we here in Kodiak seemingly are motoring along with limited cases coming in every day, still at a low risk, and people going on like it's over. So where are we at? Let's get an update on what's been happening locally in the United States and across the globe with our two experts here, Dr. Theobald and Dr. Jones. If you have questions, call us up, 486-3181, or shoot us an email, and we'll be glad to put your question to the panelists here and have them answer it during the show. Thanks for being with me this morning.
Thanks for having us again.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You guys look too cheery today. It's that log cabin background really kind of does you. Brings out the red and brings out the health in you. It looks like you've actually been starting on your your exercise program.
I'm working my way up to it. Yeah. Starts June 1st, but I don't want to dive in that deep right away. So I'm working my way up to it.
You got 2.5 weeks. And we're going to have to work on the details of how we're going to celebrate this to the people in the community of the Dr. Jones-o-meter. Let's jump right in and talk about it. What's your gut feeling about what's going on in the world these days?
Yeah, we talk about deaths a lot and trying to figure out where we're ending up at. A lot of people feel like the deaths are way overcounted in the world because we're attributing people who have died at least very quickly of something else. We attribute that to COVID if they have COVID, but the latest reports actually show that we're horribly underrepresenting COVID probably, especially in places like India, where maybe 1 in 10 COVID deaths is officially reported, and the rest of them are frankly taken care of by the family and never reach medical care, especially since the hospitals, I don't know if they're still doing it, but the hospitals were not accepting COVID patients as of last, probably 2 weeks ago. I haven't heard an update since then, though. And so we look at the COVID deaths worldwide, and we are probably missing a ton of them. Are there some people who probably would have died anyway within a month or so? Maybe. But there's a whole lot of people who are losing 40, 50 years of their life to COVID. And that's pretty tragic to me.
Well, we've got some projections of the U.S. death. I think the projections earlier this week were that there were almost 850, 900,000 Americans. And then Dr. Fauci came back and said, no, it's probably somewhere in the middle of the range of what's official and that number. So we may have 750,000 Americans that have died of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's the University of Washington report that said we've very likely underestimated the death count in the U.S. and absolutely underestimated it globally. And yeah, I think globally we are seeing that Category 5 hurricane, kind of that Dr. Osterholm talked about, in this surge, probably really driven by some of the new variants, the UK variant and the Indian, where it has 3 different mutations on the COVID virus variant.
Well, but we tend to focus a lot on death too, but the numbers for percentage of people with long COVID now it seems to me to be somewhere between 22% and 32%. They're estimating that many people who've actually gotten COVID are going to have long-term effects. That's even scarier almost.
And that's just a symptomatic long COVID. There's probably going to be long-reaching effects to this disease. One of the things we talked about it in the past, that people who had mild to moderate COVID, 78% of them had cardiac changes on MRI. And what does that mean long term? We have no idea. When patients come to me now and they're short of breath 6 months after having COVID or 3 months after having COVID, I don't know what to tell them. We don't know if they're going to get better. We don't know what's going to happen. I keep reading more about long COVID, and there are some clinics that are specializing in it. So I read what they're doing, and they frankly don't have a lot to offer either. They're turning more into research clinics, trying different things and seeing if they can improve symptoms. But it's rough. I'm less concerned about the death rate than I am about the number of people who are going to be affected by this. And especially in the long term, when we talk about looking into post-mortem exams, looking into people who died from COVID and seeing tons of brain bleeds, literally thousands of brain bleeds all over the place that wasn't even recognized early on. We've talked about it before, but it reminds me so much of having multiple concussions. And we could have a whole generation of people who got COVID and end up with early Alzheimer's, depression, anxiety, almost like we saw football players or boxers with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Because now we have tons of these little bleeds, just like if you had hundreds of concussions, and it could result in early Alzheimer's and the other symptoms described. And we're seeing that right away in a lot of patients, that a large percentage of people who get out of the hospital still have mood changes 6 months later. I personally seen this. I've seen Canna, KCHC, and Kayak, they've all immunized tons of people in this town. I personally didn't even treat them. I was told to stick around. One person for an immunization issue, and she was fine in an hour. I see tons of people for post-COVID syndrome. And so the worry about the immunization compared to the disease is unfortunate comparison.
Well, in addition to long COVID, now we're also seeing the physical manifestations or the what happens in the long term because of the long haul. But I'm also seeing some surprisingly frightening numbers about how many people who haven't even had COVID are experiencing mental health issues now because of the, I think they call it pandemic anxiety, that we anticipated back a year ago that there were some social problems and mental problems that were going to be associated with this in the first place. But now they're talking about 23-25% of the population now has some sort of associated mental health issue because of the length of time we've been shut down. That may not affect you guys, but
yeah, well, I do think, and I go back to reiterating, the CDC came out saying that less than 10% of people are catch the disease while outdoors. They're kind of called out on that. And I mean, the scientists who said it said it's like saying that less than 50% of the 50,000 cat owners are eaten by their cats. Well, probably a lot lower than that. the truth of the matter is probably about 1% of people who get COVID get it outdoors. As far as we can tell at this point. And that goes back to even the Chinese study. They had less than 1% of super spreader sites where three or more people caught COVID. It was less than 1% were outside. And even now, not to scare people, you know, we talk about things that we're wrong about. The 6-foot spacing that we've kind of been married to, if there's not adequate ventilation, it doesn't really help. If you're in a crowded room that doesn't have ventilation and the person on the other side of the room has COVID, 6 feet doesn't seem to be a big factor. It's really ventilation. And so when we talk about people being depressed, I've said it before on the show, but I had patients who stayed in their home from March until August, like did not leave their home. And I'm telling everybody out there, leave your home, go for walks. I might be on the bad side. Go to Crab Fest this year, walk around, enjoy yourself, but go immunized. It is good just to get immunized first. It's a pretty low chance that you're going to catch it outdoors, but why not stop this disease now? And so I still advocate for immunizing, but even if you're not, get out and exercise every day, go outside. Even before this all started, my patients who are depressed and or anxious, I encourage every day, get out and do 20 to 30 minutes of outside exercise, not going to the gym, outside exercise. There is something good for the soul to be outdoors. And I encourage everybody to do that.
This is on a kind of a side tangent for what you said earlier that just came up recently when I was talking with some of the older folks in town about, is it true that we've seen more instances of dementia and Alzheimer's over the past 40 years? Their take was, this didn't really used to exist a lot back in the 40s and 50s, and the 60s even. But now it seems like a significant portion of our elder population is experiencing some sort of a old age mental issues like Alzheimer's or dementia more so than there was in the past.
So I can comment on that a little bit. There's a couple factors going into that. Even when I was a little kid, I remember my aunt had Alzheimer's and they didn't take her out of the house. She stayed home, and it was shameful because it wasn't something you talked about all the time. I have this with lots of diseases. I have this discussion with patients. There's lots of women out there who have miscarriages, and it's a rough thing, but we don't talk about it. Even today, here we are in a modern society, and we don't really talk about miscarriages because it's kind of a thing of shame in some people's minds. And, you know, my wife and I went through that multiple times, but we didn't know anyone who had one because nobody talked about it. And so I'm open and talking about it with patients. Well, the same is true of Alzheimer's when I was a kid, even, that not many people talked about it. There's a second factor. I worked with a neurologist, and he was a specialist in Parkinson's. And he said, we should all be so lucky to get Parkinson's someday. And I asked him, you know, why do you say that? And he's like, well, if we live long enough, all of us will end up with Parkinson's someday. You just got to live long enough. And that's my take, is people are living a little bit longer today. We don't have as healthy a diet, though, and we have live a more sedentary lifestyle. And there's very few modifiable risks that you can do for Alzheimer's at this point. We may have for Alzheimer's soon. And believe it or not, Moderna is working on an immunization for Alzheimer's. But the truth of the matter is the modifiable risk factors we have is going out and exercising every day, eating healthy, staying mentally with it, doing social engagements, learning new things. We've become a more insulated society, and we're much more sedentary than we used to. But at the same time, we're living longer. So I agree that there probably are more cases of Alzheimer's because we really don't take care of ourselves very well anymore.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the situation in Ketchikan and your take on that. Do you see it as an isolated? I mean, they don't have cruise ships coming in. You assume that they're probably along the lines of us, or even better in terms of the amount of residents that they have that have already been fully vaccinated. Yet, you know, they've got this huge spike going through town, and we don't know whether or not it's a variant or not.
Yeah, that's a great point. Ketchikan has around 59% of their population vaccinated, ages 16 and older, and Kodiak has about 63% of the population with at least one vaccine. These are both with at least one vaccine, ages 16 and older. So they're right up near where Kodiak is, which I think does kind of give us another cautionary tale that just because we have over 50%, you know, 60% of our population vaccinated doesn't mean that we can't have another outbreak. This one, I believe, was tied to a wrestling tournament, sports tournament. So again, spread by youth and kind of spread like wildfire. And I think just we still got to keep our guard up is the moral of that story, I think. And we're, you know, end of the semester, there's a lot of sports events here. And we, you know, a lot of people are vaccinated. We're kind of all relaxing a little bit. But I think, you know, just keeping some of the mitigation factors in play until the school semester is out and until we're kind of through this potential surge is still really important.
The sad part of all this is now sports has stopped, schools are closed. And frankly, most of the kids who it affects didn't have a choice about getting the vaccine. And so I still put pressure on adults. I want sports to happen. I want schools to be open. And just like we talked about with Alzheimer's, the modifiable thing we can do is get the immunization. And so I really encourage people, not just thinking about themselves, but thinking about the others and in your family and in your community who can't get this immunization. Just get it. Literally at this point, millions upon millions of people have gotten this vaccination. And I still don't know anyone who's had a long issue with it. Like I said, a few people have felt lousy for an hour afterwards. And my daughter felt sick the next day for the day. But especially old people like me, you should be getting this vaccination because I have like no side effects. So I really encourage people. It seems to be young people who have the worst side effects. Don't tell them, but they seem to have the rough day after.
I have a question before I get into the kids vaccine. This is a question that we've answered many times, but I think people, no matter how much information you have out there, it needs to be reinforced, which is the caller called and wanted to know whether people who have had COVID already still need to get vaccinated.
Yeah, that's a great question. At this point, yes, the answer is yes. If you recently had COVID and you're still experiencing any of the symptoms, then wait for a couple weeks to get the COVID vaccine. But basically, you're just giving yourself more protective immunity to get the vaccine after being infected. It has shown to increase the immune response and the protection from the vaccine. Getting it, especially after someone has had an infection. And people can get reinfected after one infection. In fact, that's happening quite a lot with these new variants. In India, they looked at some studies, and people that had coronavirus before was not a protective factor for getting infected with one of the new variants. So definitely, with all the variants that are out and spreading globally at this point, get the vaccine. The vaccine does seem to show effectiveness so far against the variant, which is interesting, which is good.
Most of the variants.
If you don't mind me picking on you, Dr. Theobald, what was your experience getting the vaccine after having gotten COVID? How was it? Other people can hear.
Yeah, I had very minimal. I had a sore arm for the next couple of the day or two, kind of like the tetanus booster where it feels like someone punched you in the arm for a couple of days, but nothing bad at all. And then I didn't really have any side effects or symptoms from the vaccine. Maybe felt a little fatigue, but nothing different than normal. And yeah, no other kind of viral side effects. And the second dose was very similar. I didn't have any significant side effects from that as well. So it is, and again, if you compare the virus to the vaccine, as far as side effects goes, as far as potential problems, as far as, you know, morbidity, mortality, there is no, I mean, it's very, very, very obvious. There was a really great study done here in Alaska and just published by the ADN about vaccine hesitancy in Alaskans. About 35% of Alaskans are hesitant to get the vaccine, open to learning more. And their two main concerns are, one, that the side effects and the potential problems from the vaccine, and two, I'm trying to remember the second one. Oh, just if it's safe and effective, basically. And that's just public health information. The side effects, the problems from the vaccine are not a big deal, and compared again to the virus and compared in just general to all vaccines. And also, it is extremely effective. And the second thing was, people didn't think COVID was a problem for them. COVID is a problem for all of us. We, again, are riding this tiger, not driving it, as Dr. Osterholm likes to say. You don't know when you're going to potentially be exposed. You don't know which variant you're going to be exposed to at this point. And so it just to kind of, you know, drive that home. And it is a extremely deadly disease, as we're seeing around the world. I mean, it's not a hoax. It's not just a government kind of thing. This is a serious viral illness that is with high mortality and morbidity.
Well, again, I go back to those numbers. You know, we just say them in passing and have come to accept them. But 3 million people, you know, 600,000 Americans, 600 Americans a day are dying now, even though this is starting to retreat. And as far as how the vaccine actually works, I mean, the thought was like, okay, I got COVID, so I'm protected. Even if I got it again, my body's going to be able to fight this off. That's proven in a lot of cases not to be true, because people have become reinfected and gotten a worse case the second time around. And it is true that if you are exposed to a different type of COVID, one of the variants, that you can catch that even though you had the first case before. And that second case might be a whole lot more virulent and have worse consequences for you than the original one. So it's kind of like having an immediate booster, right? I mean, if you get the disease and then you take the vaccine on top of that, you are much more prepared to fight off another reinfection.
That's exactly right. I kind of think of it as like military training. When you have a drill, you know, something that you're fighting off, the more your body kind of revs, or your military practices that and really kind of learns how to take that enemy down, the better they're going to be each time that they see that enemy. And that's exactly what the vaccine is doing. It's training our immune system to recognize and make specific soldiers that know how, you know, kind of special forces that know how to take that virus down when it does see it. And so, yeah, the more protection, the better. And there is no guarantee that if you've had COVID-19 once that you can't get it again and that it won't be worse the second time.
And when we do look at the variants, reading the reports when the South African variant started going around, the doctors there were reporting they couldn't tell a difference between people who had already been infected with COVID and people who hadn't been infected with COVID. I don't know if any studies have been done on it, but they felt like having had COVID before provided virtually no protection against the South African variant. And it seemed to be tearing through those people just as well as people who never had it.
That's similar to the P1617, I'm getting my variant numbers mixed up here. Or B1617, I think. They showed that there was not significant protective immunity from having the virus earlier in the year.
The immunization is pulling out a specific spike protein that it uses to attach to cells. And there has been a little bit of variance with those, but not enough for your body not to recognize it. Where if you just have an infection of it, we don't know what your antibodies are going to come up with as a place of deciding this is a protein or an area I need to grab on. That may change very rapidly. They've kind of looked at what they want to target to create an immunity to, because they thought it would be universal among viruses. And there has been some change, but not enough to make a difference, it seems like.
Well, the three big things they seem to talk about in terms of these variants is that they're much more highly transmissible, that they cause more severe disease, and they're better able to evade immunity. So if you've already had the disease, that's what you're facing if you don't have a vaccine when you run into one of those things. On the other hand, you have a recommendation from the WHO that came out, from the WHO studies that came out and said the vaccines that we have available now do show that the vaccines work on the B16617 variant. That's the one that has been bombing through India. It's also proven to be effective in terms of the B117 from the UK. I don't know anything about this P1 variant that's coming through Brazil and where that's at right now. And then you have the South African one, when apparently the vaccines are pretty effective against that too. But how many more are we going to run into over the course of the next 6 months if this is still out of control worldwide in pockets?
Yeah, there are hundreds of variants out there, probably thousands of variants out there that we don't necessarily know about, or, you know, aren't showing up so far as the main. What's happening is as infections are being genotyped, they're seeing which genotypes are becoming the predominant strain causing the infections. And so there's hundreds out there right now, and it will take time to see what's going to become, you know, the next variant strain. But it is high risk for continuing to mutate, especially as a globe, you know, as a planet, as a global population. People aren't getting vaccinated as quick countries as we have been able to in the United States. And yeah, it is a big concern.
Which kind of goes into what we kind of touched on first, jokingly, second, because of actually that there were experiments going on about the mix and match routine, where, you know, people were the advice now, if it's Pfizer or Moderna, is two shots within 3 weeks, and then you are theoretically fully immunized. But there are cases where people haven't developed sufficient antibodies. I mean, you have these, they call it vaccine breakthrough, where people who are fully vaccinated are still contracting COVID. And they're tracking those cases and saying the vaccine is still effective because you're not seeing a high death rate or a high hospitalization rate among those group of people. But it's still possible to get COVID even after you've been vaccinated. So
yeah, especially after only one vaccine. I had a patient who, unfortunately, she'd gotten vaccinated and like 3 days later, she had a known exposure and ended up catching COVID. But on top of that, statistically, we figure that even if you're immunized, about 6% of people who are fully immunized are not protected by it. And it's hard to figure out who those people are going to be. Even if you're on antibody titers and stuff like that, it's hard to figure out who those people are going to be.
Is there a way to test for the level of antibodies somebody has after they've been vaccinated?
So we certainly check for antibodies. It's possible today to check for antibodies, and it's even. But the problem is, that's not our own only immune defense. There's the antibodies, but there's also the T cells that remember what's going on, which is another one of your kind of white blood cell protections. And both of them have ability to remember this disease. So even people with no antibodies, it doesn't mean they're not immune to COVID. If they have no antibodies to COVID, it means we're uncertain. And in some research universities, they have the ability to test for T cell immunity, but that is not widespread at all.
Same thing. Some of them are testing to see the number or like the amount of antibodies a person will have following an infection, but that's also not the widespread common testing that we do for antibody testing. At this point, our antibody testing is yes, no, do you have COVID-19 antibodies in your system?
So I have a question from somebody that said 2 months after the second vaccine, their mother-in-law got tested in a hospital after surgery and showed there were no antibodies. How is it possible, and what does that mean?
Yeah, we kind of went into that already, a little bit already. We don't know what it means exactly. The older we get, the response of our immune system is, and theoretically the immunity achieved, even though it's really good in elderly population with this vaccine, better than most vaccines, we don't know how long it lasts. And we don't know that their mother is not immune to COVID just because she doesn't have antibodies. She may have great immune response through her T cells that would be sufficient to keep the disease at bay. So there's no way to answer that question currently.
Well, let's say we have an excess of vaccine in town, and you know we got a lot of people who are in at-risk groups and over 65. Is there any reason why you, just for safety's sake, if somebody said, you know, I just want to be sure, I don't want to get this, I wanted myself to be overly protected, is there any reason not to get the third shot or fourth shot? I mean, if we're looking at a booster in the long run, is it just taking too many aspirins, or would it maybe provide somebody with a better antibody response?
Yeah, there's a good chance that there is kind of research looking into that third vaccine within 12 months of getting the first dose, and that will, there's a good chance that will be needed in the future and will kind of boost that protective immunity. Basically, it's like a new training drill for those little antibodies to kind of remember the coronavirus and your whole immune. I mean, it's extremely complex. Our immune system is really, really, really incredible. I mean, think of the most incredible, elegant military systems that exist, and that's what our immune system is, to protect us from foreign invaders. So there's a lot going on, and we're only testing, you know, this little thing here or that little thing there. We're not looking at the entire immune system and all of its complexity for how it is, you know, creating immunity or protection. But there is a good chance we'll need a third booster. I think we'll, the big thing is two things. One, making sure we use the vaccine for the most amount of people up front. And now, as we kind of alluded to, 12 to 15 year olds, they've been approved by the FDA to receive the Pfizer vaccine. And today the CDC is going to formally, you know, weigh in on their approval decision for 12 to 15 year olds. The safety profile for 12 to 15 year olds, the studies have looked at over 2,200 or something, 12 to 15 year olds, and the safety profile is incredible. Zero of those adolescents that got the Pfizer vaccine got COVID following the vaccine so far in the studies. So it's extremely effective, and there were no poor, you know, outcomes, safety issues with it. So it is expected that the CDC will approve that today. And if you have a 12 to 15 year old, we're still in school. People are wanting to do sports. People want to hang out. And, you know, there's so many different community events coming up. I would say get your family vaccinated. The other really important thing is the two most kind of influential voices that people have made a decision whether or not they're going to get the vaccine is, number one, in Alaska, family and friends. Number two, your healthcare provider. So family and friends, tell your family and friends, you know, remind them to get vaccinated, talk with them about maybe concerns or fears, and convince them to get vaccinated, because it is the one thing that is going to keep us from, you know, keep us wide open and healthy and safe here in Kodiak, and not necessarily, you know, have what happened to Ketchikan.
So again, let me get an answer from you about the, if you have a 65 year old person come in and has already been fully vaccinated, do they, if they wanted to, could they get a third shot?
Not at this point. We'll be looking at it though, and I think we'll probably have an answer in the next 3 months, but as of right now, it wouldn't be an option to get a third shot.
So for the mother-in-law situation there, where she goes in and she's testing negative for antibodies, I mean, what's the recourse for that person? I mean, if you want to see something that says, yes, I have protection against this, I can go out in public again.
Yeah, I actually feel for her on that one. And I would think that if she had the Moderna or Pfizer, maybe it would be good for her to get the Johnson & Johnson next time, to have a different approach to the immune response. But as of right now, we don't have any plan for booster shots. And like I said, there's no way to tell that she's immune or not immune. We don't know.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit more about kids and the vaccine. It's only the Pfizer vaccine that's going to be available, right? It was approved Monday, and it's supposed to be official as of today. So some places throughout the country are already setting up clinics for 12 to 15 year olds to receive the Pfizer vaccine. We're not there in Kodiak yet, right? I mean, you're not setting up the tent and setting up different clinics to see when you first opened up the tiers here, we had hundreds of people lined up. I'm assuming with that population, if you translate the numbers and assume that maybe the people who got themselves vaccinated are going to want to have their kids vaccinated as well, that there's going to be a large volume of kids lined up to want to take a shot as soon as it's available.
So it is only 4 years of age, so I think we're probably going to just have it taken care of in clinic. And I think it is something that we can handle. And so I'm not positive if they've started opening the schedule to have kids immunized yet, but I imagine within the next week we will be.
Well, here, hypothetical, you know, if you're trying to be as safe as possible and you're planning the family trip and you've got a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 17-year-old in the house, parents are vaccinated, and you're going to take that trip to go see grandma, what do you do with the 10-year-old?
If everybody else is immunized, there's pretty low chance that he's going to get it. And we've talked about it before. Yep, young kids do get this disease, but you look at the numbers as a percentage of population, it is lower among kids, and the viral burden is lower among kids. And so is it possible for young kids to get it and spread it? Absolutely. Is it less likely? Yeah, it's less likely. And so I would feel way safer hanging out in the room with a 5-year-old who I knew had COVID than a 50-year-old.
Okay, so it appears like, is this vaccine safe for kids? I mean, have we done a sufficient amount of testing on that population? Because as last year, you know, they were limiting the pool of people who were doing the trials. And at that time, people were concerned that there weren't enough people in the pool to do testing for adults to get the vaccine. And now it seems like we've turned around fairly quickly and said, oh, yeah, that vaccine is good for kids, too, for only from 12 to, you know. I mean, is this just an arbitrary age that they said now, well, you know, I think it's good enough for 12 to 15-year-olds, but not anybody younger than that? I mean, how do we really know that?
We don't know for sure what the youngest age it's going to be for is. I don't know exactly how they chose the next bracket of children to be 12 to 15 years. I'm sure there's science that goes into it, and I can look that up and research more. But there's different kind of developmental stages in youth in those different age groups, and we do kind of tend to pool them when we're doing their well child checks and their adolescent well visits and sports physicals. We do kind of focus on, you know, the ages and stages basically for those different groups. There's a lot of similar things that happen in the 12 to 15 year old age group as far as, you know, puberty and all the other things that go on. But so they're starting to look at the younger groups, and they're going to take probably each age bracket and do studies on each of them. And the good news is that we have so much information now from ages 16 and up, and looking at, you know, the 16-year-olds that really aren't that much different than the 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds. So far, the data that we have in the 16, 17, 18-year-olds is also very excellent. So I think that gives scientists and the people doing studies reassurance that it's going to benefit, and it's not going to cause harm to the next kind of bracket of ages below.
So, they have actually done some studies on 12 to 15-year-olds that has been shown to be safe. And currently they're doing studies on kids as young as 3 with the vaccine. And so they are taking it down down to younger and younger ages. So these studies are being done, and it has been tested on kids 12 to 15 years old already to make sure there's no weird side effects. And it seems to be very similar to the adult population as to how people react to the vaccine and how immunity is achieved. Probably a little more effective because the immune system is more robust, but it does seem to be very effective.
So is there a child's dose, or is the vaccine we already have on island going to be repurposed for kids? Or are they going to have to send us a new batch that's at a lower dose?
I believe it's the same dose. and that we would be able to use the Pfizer vaccine that we already have. I'll double check that.
Yeah, and that was the big thing, and that's why it was approved very quickly, is because it is the same. And once we get into young kids, though, now it starts getting a little bit we get a little less sure of ourselves, because does a 3-year-old get the same dose as a 50-year-old? And so it's going to take a little longer to figure out really young kids as compared to 12 to 15, where we feel like, it's a blanket statement, but in many ways they are very similar to adults physically. And so because of that, we can, you know, kind of broaden what we're doing and use the same immunization.
So if you're a parent and you're thinking about this and you're thinking, well, kids don't get sick from this, you know, they may contract it, but they don't, you know, the long-term effects aren't there. You know, they don't get it as severely and feel it as much as adults do. So why should I get my kid vaccinated?
One of my good friends her parents don't believe in the vaccination and refuse to get it. And she's somewhat distraught because she would really love to bring her kids to see grandma and grandpa, but she doesn't want to be responsible for spreading COVID to her parents after flying, coming through the big cities and going back home. It puts her in quite a quandary because she doesn't want to feel like, you know, she's the one who's contributing to her parents' poor health if they would end up getting it. And she would love to get her kids immunized right now just to be done with it and be able to move on. But she doesn't have that ability. I guarantee when the ages get low enough, she's going to get her kids immunized. And she's not a big vaccine kind of gal. She's a very natural aromatherapy kind of person. All this voodoo that we do. Not trying to beat up on aromatherapy. I think it's fine. It's just a lot of the stuff we do in the medical profession and in the society just seems a little bit like, but she's into the more natural approach to a lot of things, and she would love to get that immunization for her kids.
Yeah, I think definitely looking at the safety profile, and the studies were 2,260 kids age 12 to 15, 0 kids in the vaccine arm got COVID, 18 kids in the control or the placebo arm got the COVID infection. I just looking at the whole profile, I would absolutely recommend if I had kids that they would get the vaccine. With and all the physicians, I mean, again, on like a lot of the physician Facebook groups or different kind of groups that I've been involved regarding COVID, they're all wanting to get their kids vaccinated and or were wanting to get them enrolled in studies early on. I think, yeah, as a healthcare professional, you really see the impact that COVID has on the community and our global community too. Kodiak's been lucky as far as our numbers, although we have had a significant burden of illness. I think it was 4% of the people that got COVID were hospitalized, and we had a 0.4% mortality rate, just doing the math from the numbers that we have here. So anyway, all of that to say, yes, I think I would absolutely want to have a conversation with parents about getting their children vaccinated, and we can be reassured that it is safe and effective for the kids.
Well, I think of it in terms of the mythical herd immunity number too, because if you don't have the total population included in the amount of people who've had it or had vaccination, you're never going to get near that 70-80% number for herd immunity if you take out the whole population that's under 15. I mean, if these variants continue to spread, right? I mean, there's a very good possibility that the variant could be moved through the population, even into the vaccinated population, through variants attaching themselves to kids. But just my thought.
Yeah, I agree. The more people that get vaccinated, the closer we get to herd immunity, the better off we're all going to be. And the sooner we get there, too, the better off we're all going to be.
So, the longer we leave this hanging around, the more variants we're going to end up with, the more chances we're going to end up with a variant that does hit all the vaccinated people. And so that's why I tell people, let's just get vaccinated so we can move on. We've had that discussion. I think if enough people do move forward with this, we can get to the point of a normal. That's my hope. I don't want a new normal. I just want normal. And I think it is possible. I'm an optimist, though.
Well, you want to go to Crab Festival. I mean, are we at normal? It does appear to me somewhat that the city is in a position where there's a lot of people that think we're at normal.
Yeah, unfortunately, it does seem like the same people who don't believe masks work also don't believe that vaccines, they should get a vaccine. And it's a tough one. We've discussed this before, but it's a distrust now that we have for government, or a distrust we have for the scientific community. I'm personally Christian, and I think a lot of Christians have a lot of distrust for science and distrust for government that, to me, leaves them in a very, very cemented in belief that it's really hard to chip through. And so when I look at the church I go to, mask wearing was like almost non-existent. And even in the midst of the issue. So I stopped going to church for months because I didn't feel like I could safely serve my patients while going to church. And it was a tough decision for me. I watch it online, but it seems like there's a large segment of society that has put up walls that they're unwilling to even listen or consider other ideas. And they heard some guy online that said that the vaccine wasn't safe and they're going to follow that rather than following people who devote their lives to helping people and devote their lives to trying to understand these diseases. And I'm one of those few people who, I believe in my faith and I believe in science too. And I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable with that. Are there different ideas out there? Yeah, but I'm not uncomfortable in any way with it. And so when I look at this, I think there's an unfounded fear among a lot of people in our population and a fear of becoming a victim. We've developed a very huge victim society now. And so people are very worried about becoming victims now. I would much rather be a victim of the vaccine or something like that if it gives an opportunity to save other people. If I can be an example to my kids and get the vaccine so that I make them safer, I'll do it in a second. And I did it as soon as I could to verify for myself, yeah, this thing seems to be fine. I did my own research. I even read all the conspiracy files on it and realized they have no basis, no merit. I looked at what their sources were. Like even these ones saying that the proteins on the placenta are similar to the protein that this vaccine targets, it's complete garbage. And that letter, they say it was written by a person from the developers of the vaccine. It's not. It's written by an anti-vaccinator person in Germany. And it's it's not like it's hidden. You can find it and see who wrote it and who the person is that started these conspiracy theories. And there's no basis, no foundation for it. And there's so much stuff that's accepted on a whim when thousands of scientists and thousands of people who have studied this are like, no, this is a good vaccine, this is safe. And people like me who spent a lot of time reading about this and a lot of time thinking about this, early on when we started doing this show and we talked about coming out with a vaccine, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if I'd take it. And when I read about it and learned about it, I was all in. I had no problem taking it. And I was not fearful of taking it. But I think we need to at least lower our guard a little bit and listen to other people. I'm more than happy to talk to anyone in the community, and I won't beat you up on your beliefs. I have no problem with where you're coming from. I'd just like to give you information that I feel I've spent a lot of time studying and learning about, so that you can maybe have a different perspective than you might right now. But at least listen to people on both sides. Everybody needs to start listening to each other in this country as a whole, COVID or any other issue.
I think you need your own talk show. That's a good place to close, I think, for the day. We're about 10 minutes after 10 o'clock. It's been a very interesting discussion. And let's do it again sometime. Well, that's it, apparently. There we go.
Oh, there you are. I think the government conspiracy cut me off, right?
You were smitten. I saw the little lightning bolt come down right over the top of your cabin there, and the picture went off. Hey, thank you for another interesting discussion this week. I think the plan may be that we may be back next week. We may not be back until the first week of June, when Curtis comes back to join us for another conversation. But that was a really interesting close to the conversation. I'd love to devote a whole show to that. I think it could be a very interesting discussion. So thanks all for participating, and thanks to all of you who are out there listening today. If you have questions for future panels, send them in, and we'll get the questions to the panelists here before the show goes on, so that they can be prepared to answer you rather than do it on the fly. But,
well, thanks again for letting us on, Mike. You're very well prepared. Keep us on our toes. I appreciate you hosting all the time.
All right. You guys have a great week.
Take care.
All right. Bye.